click on the tip jar and join KBOO, and I urge you to do so. I think you would enjoy having one of our t-shirts. And it is through the World Wide Web that we go out to you and all the ships at sea.
Yes, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station, with a busy Thursday morning. Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll kick off Flashpoints. It's investigative news journalism with host Dennis Bernstein. On today's show, we'll hear about Venezuela's claims that the United States is destabilizing their country. Plus, we'll examine the recently released CIA report that justified the war in Iraq. Finally, we'll look at how money is corrupting our election system. At 11 o'clock on Between the Covers, we feature interviews with locally and nationally known authors. Today, it's Alexandra Fuller talking about her latest book, Leaving Before the Rains Come. And at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures with hosts Jen Chavez and SW Concert. Today's guests are Laura Lowe Forte, who directs the North Portland Multimedia Training Center's Vanport Multimedia Project, and veteran filmmaker Todd Darling, who is returning to Portland. That is all coming up this morning on KBOO. Up next, it's Air Cascadia with Chris Andre.
Tune in Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. to hear Rose City Native Radio with your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Rose City Native Radio is a new public affairs program bringing you local and national Native issues and Native contemporary music. You can find more information about the show online at kboo.fm or find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, March 26th. 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. And I just want to point out, where else are you going to hear Native American news but here on KBOO? Something important to listen to. Today's guest, however, on Air Cascadia, we have Doug Haken with Oregon Wild joining us to talk about the Northwest Forest Plan. It is a really scary piece of legislation. It goes on for pages and pages. Simply reading the table of contents of this decision is enough to set off alarm bells ringing everywhere on all sides. Other alarm bells going off today. The Trans-Pacific Partnership includes a process called ISDS. Remember that. ISDS. Similar to ISIS, only this time it is economic warfare against the American people. ISDS simply means Investor State Dispute Settlement. It's a devilish bit of legalistic hocus pocus, according to Hightower. It elevates mere corporations to the status of corporate states, putting them on par with nation states. It allows them to go to foreign tribunals staffed by corporate lawyers and sue governments to demand taxpayer compensation for a particular national, state, or local law. So it would, in fact, if let's use the Northwest Forest Plan as an example. Should a foreign corporation, should a Chinese company, for example, say, we want you to completely clear-cut every single tree in Oregon, they can take state of Oregon to court these tribunals and have their way with us. That's how bad the Trans-Pacific Partnership is. That's why it has been negotiated in utmost secrecy. But now, right here in Cascadia, where we plant our feet, where we breathe the air, where we drink the water, the Northwest Forest Plan is once again up, is on the table. Doug Haken joins us today with Oregon Wild to talk about what is in the Northwest Forest Plan and how it could affect us. Good morning, Doug. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us this morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, the Northwest Forest Plan, there are many of my concerns here are that, of course, it's a giveaway for timber companies, and it's poor management. I always have said that a managed forest is a tree farm. But can you get a little bit deeper into the Northwest Forest Plan and some of the points that we ought to revisit and reconsider?
Sure. The most important thing to remember is that we're talking about public lands. And for many decades, our public forests were treated almost exactly like our private forests. They were liquidating the old-growth forests and replanting with a dense crop of Douglas fir trees. They were logging right over streams. They built roads through our pristine wilderness areas. They removed massive amounts of carbon from our forest, ruined salmon runs, drove several species to the brink of extinction. And the Northwest Forest Plan came along in an attempt to try to stop that system and really to try to treat public lands with the respect they deserve. So the Northwest Forest Plan came along in about 1994, and it dramatically slowed the loss of old-growth forests, which is one of the most important things we can expect from it.
And when you talk about this dense crop of Doug fir trees, and obviously intended for harvest, the Northwest Forest Plan, I believe, was more or less a product of the Clinton administration who signed off on it. It's been, again, many years in the making. But right now, What does it protect, and what do we stand to lose? What, in fact, is at stake here?
Well, about half of Oregon's forests, or half of the forests in Oregon, are private lands, and those are mostly managed as tree farms. That's where our wood comes from. But on our public lands, we get clean water, we get wildlife habitat for people who like to hunt and fish, we get recovery of endangered species, we get carbon storage. We get amazing recreation opportunities where people go and, have lifelong, camping trips where you have, develop lifelong memories. And all these public values you don't get on the private lands, but you do get on the public lands. And so after our forests were nearly destroyed by decades of clear cutting, we've more or less stopped that, and we moved into a restoration mode. And the Northwest Forest Plan has, for about 20 years, tried to restore our forests, but it's a 100-year plan. So we're only 20 years into a 100-year plan, and now there are people that want to go back and go into old-growth logging again and start clear-cutting again and reduce the buffers on our streams, and that's what we're up against.
And how are you? How do you confront that? How then? I know Oregon Wild has done most of the heavy lifting on this and has been extremely proactive on behalf of our forests, our last of our forests. What really do we have left, and how do we go about protecting it?
Well, luckily, because they're public lands, the government that manages these forests has to involve the public, and so it's up to the public to get involved and stand up for the forests that they love. And there's going to be a public process involving several opportunities for public comment, and through that process we can try to influence the forest managers and remind them of why we love our forests, why we want clean drinking water, why we want to have healthy salmon runs, why we want to save the last old-growth forests, why these forests should store carbon to help stabilize our climate instead of log more to make all those problems worse.
We'll really only have 10% left. We frequently have Tim Hermack with the Native Forest Council on the program to bring listeners up to speed on some of the history of the timber industry in Oregon. One thing that concerns me is the so-called timber counties in southern Oregon that feel that logging is the solution to their school funding problems. And my contention would be, and again, a disclaimer, this is news, but I will tell you straight up, I do have opinions about this. What effort has there been on the part of the timber counties to come up with a better way to fund schools. After 100 years, it would seem that this is a source that has been tapped out. We used to have lots and lots of trees and not many people. Now we've got lots and lots of people and not many trees. What do you see as the future for the timber counties?
Well, you make a very good point. It was easy to, fund the counties when we were, when our mountains were covered with old growth forests and they were liquidating those for quick cash. But now that the old growth is mostly gone, looking to our forests to fund our counties, it just doesn't make any sense at all. Historically, counties were directly linked to the timber sales on public lands. And it turned the counties into cheerleaders for more and more logging, which really was counter to their interests because all that environmental degradation was actually undermining the quality of life in those counties and undermining the future economic opportunities for those counties. So we think the solution lies in a shared responsibility approach where maybe the federal government could provide some money to help fund the counties, the state could revise the tax structure so that the maybe the timber industry paid their fair share when they logged their private lands. They've been let off the hook in recent decades. And then the counties themselves need to raise their property taxes to at least get closer to the average, because right now those rural counties have property tax rates that are far below average, and they're just not really realistic about how they're going to fund the services that they want.
And, of course, we're facing historic drought conditions that look like that's what lies ahead. It would seem, I have to wonder who's driving the bus anyway. If there are complaints, if farmers are letting their fields lie fallow, if they are having to buy hay for livestock, doesn't it seems like that would send a message that we rely on forests as probably the key integral part of the ecosystem that keeps things in balance and prevents us from facing things, events like this terrible drought that we now are confronted with. Who's in charge here? It seems that somebody should be paying attention and saying, we can't afford drought. We can't afford to lose any more trees.
Yeah, climate change is a critical issue for our forests. And if drought is going to increase, then that's an additional stress that these forests have to face. And one way to help make our forests stay healthy in the face of that drought is to remove other stresses. Those other stresses are the roads, the overbuilt road system out there, and the logging and clear cutting that we do. So if we want to help prepare our forests for drought and the stress of climate change, we need to back off and put less demands on our public forests. The other side of the climate equation is that we need to use these forests to store carbon. The forests in Oregon represent one of the greatest stores of living carbon on the planet, and we need to protect that carbon and keep it in the forest and not log it and send it up in the atmosphere and send it into wood products that are essentially disposable.
One final question. We've only got about a minute and a half left, and I want to save time for you to let people know how they can be in touch with Oregon Wild and support your efforts on behalf of Oregon's forest. But I do want to ask you again about private lands, coming full circle. In eastern Oregon, the private lands are being set aside where people there ranches who want to protect their farms around ranches and also the sage grouse, and they have actually stepped forward and seen it in their best their enlightened self-interest. I think that's a very important part of this, is enlightened self-interest to preserve land for this creature. There is a perfect example for timber counties, is find something else to do. Perhaps private land owners could be persuaded to see it in their enlightened self-interest to preserve the forest. They're currently worth more vertically situated than horizontally situated. What efforts have you seen to reach out to private landowners?
Well, unfortunately, a large fraction of the private forests in Oregon are owned by corporate interests that basically are run by people on Wall Street who are very motivated to manage on a very short rotation. So there really are a crop of trees. We're not talking about forests anymore. We're talking about a crop of trees. And for every acre of our forest that is turned into a tree farm, that's an acre that's not available for salmon habitat, that's not available for spotted owl habitat, that's not available for providing clean drinking water or carbon storage. So it makes the protection of our public lands even more important. And I don't think the people in Wall Street are going to change the way they manage private lands unless, you know, people in Salem force them to. So we need people in Salem to get a backbone and bring the Oregon Forest Practices Act, you know, into the 21st century.
Doug, thank you so much for this. We really appreciate all of what you've said this morning. I want to just let listeners know about Oregon Wild, how they can be in touch and support what you're doing.
Sure. Oregon Wild has a website with lots of useful information, and that can be found at oregonwild.org.
Thank you so much. My guest has been Doug Hagen with Oregon Wild. This has been Air Cascadia for March 26, 2015. Rock Bergeron engineered the show today for us. Thank you so much, Rock. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Today on